This week's episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by Loot Crate. Go to lootcrate.com/War Rocket Ajax and use the coupon code War Rocket Ajax to get $3 off your brand new subscription.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
Welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts, and ain't nobody dope as me. I'm Chris Sims. With me as always, my co-host, he's so fresh and so clean, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you today?
I'm good. I also would have taken that I'm in Slum National. Either one is fine. Chris, how you feeling? I know you weren't feeling so great last week.
Yeah, dog, I got that crud. I'm getting over it. I think I probably sound a little bit better than I did when we recorded the bonus content and the Every Story Ever this weekend. Still fighting it off, and that will be discussed later in my check, but I'm, you know what? I'm here. I'm ready to talk about some comic books. I'm ready to do some checks and recs. I'm ready to have a good show, which I think is what we're going to have, Matt.
Well, Chris, be heartened, because our live episode at Emerald City Comic Con has been confirmed. It is up on the Emerald City website now, listed. It will be, I'm just going to tell everybody now, pre-checks, that it will be Friday at noon. The Friday of Emerald City Comic Con at noon. So if you were planning to come see us live, that is the time to do it on the podcast stage. So come out if you can.
Is it going to be a stage? Is it going to be like...
Yeah, there's a whole...
Is it going to be like out in the open?
There's a whole stage for podcasts.
Like, is it going to be on the floor?
No. I think it's in a room.
Okay.
They're just
okay.
Calling it that panel room, the podcast stage.
Okay. Look, I mean, I'm fine. Either way, I will show up and talk. It's the one thing I'm good at.
Chris, we have a great show for everybody this week. We are welcoming the editors of a brand new anthology called Not Forgotten, which is all about Golden Age characters who have lapsed into the public domain. And I contributed a story to it with Rodrigo Vargas that I'm pretty happy about the Scarlet Avenger. We're going to talk about my story as well as others, because the Kickstarter for the anthology is starting this week. Einar Masson and Matt Harding, not Matt Hardy, Matt Harding.
Is he broken, Matt Harding, though?
We'll find out when we talk to them. The editors of that anthology are with us to talk about it. That's going to be fun. But before we do that, Chris, let's thank our newest supporters on Patreon to start.
That's right, Matt. These are the people who have gone over to patreon.com/WarRocketAjax. They've kicked in as little as a dollar a month to help support the show, to help support you and me, to help us keep the lights on and pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. We're still on the cusp of the Snack Situation standalone monthly podcast. That's our next milestone goal, and you can help us get there if you want to go over there and do something cool like these people have done.
Our newest supporters on Patreon include Alberto De Jesus.
Alberto, thank you.
Longtime listener of the show, friend of ours, contributor to the show, sends in questions. Great guy. Ken Brown also put in a pledge.
Thank you, Ken.
And those are our newest supporters on Patreon. If you would like to help us out by kicking in as little as $1 a month, you can get ad-free episodes of the show. You can get bonus audio. People got an hour of bonus audio last week.
We did an intense deep dive into the Fantasy Cruise in my experience that if you're a fan of this show, you don't want to miss that one. That was some good bonus content.
We have backer exclusive art that comes out quarterly. We have physical rewards and line stepping privileges for all the lists we do. So that's all the cool stuff you can get on Patreon. If you would like to help us out, as Chris said, you can go to patreon.com/WarRocketAjax. All right, Chris, that is it for thanking the folks on Patreon. Let's do some checks and recs now.
Let's do it. So come on,
We got into it a little bit, but please tell us what's going on with you this week. We might call it your health situation.
We might call it the health situation.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. Health situation, 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 health situation. Matt Wilson got a sinus infection. 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 Chris got a cold. 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 Chris got a cold.
If all went according to plan, you did just hear a little jingle from our buddy Matt Fisher, which is only half accurate, because Matt, you currently do not have a sinus infection.
I am hale and hearty at the moment. Things could change at any time, but I'm feeling okay right now.
I do have a cold. I picked up a little bit of the con crud from Fantasy, and then I just did a con last weekend as well. The 40th annual Charlotte Mini Con, which was a really fun show. It's the kind of halfway point to Heroes Con that Heroes Aren't Hard to Find does every year, and that was really fun. Got to talk to some very cool people and have a real good time. But I was buzzed on Dayquil for the whole darn day. I'm recovering now. I'm feeling a little bit better. I feel like maybe I'll be able to function as a human being again soon. The problem is that Aiden also has this cold, which means that I got to be woken up at 2 o'clock in the morning when she woke up buzzing off that NyQuil, like just furiously angry with me at getting her sick. Like she sat bolt upright in bed and went, "I can't believe you got me sick. I'm so mad at you." And then like went immediately back to sleep and does not remember that incident at all. So that's what the rest of my life's going to be like. It's very exciting. Another weird quirk of this is that neither one of us has wanted to do anything. So neither one of us has wanted to cook because we've both been sick. We found out there's a actually really good pho place 5 minutes from the apartment that we ate at 2 days in a row. This is day three and we might do it again because it just clears us up. It's very tasty and delicious. So we went to the pho place, and then we went to Target because we knew we needed groceries. We needed some food in the house. Matt, do you know what happens when you send two sick people to Target and there is no, like, there is no non-sick person oversight on what they buy? Do you know what happens?
They buy weird stuff and then don't realize what they bought?
Oh, I think we realized what we bought. I think that wasn't the problem.
Thank you, by the way, for all that great swallowing noise you did right into the mic.
I didn't mean to. You were done talking faster than I expected. Look, I'm drinking. Look, you might remember former War Rocket Ajax recommendation, Orange Blossom Tea. That's what I drink when I'm sick. Here's what we got. We got a one package of mega stuffed Oreos, a bag of nacho cheese Doritos, 6-pack of ginger ale, a bag of frosted animal crackers, some Gatorade, and bread. That's it. That's our groceries for the week.
Those are all staples. I don't see any problem with any of those.
I don't know if we talked about this on the show, but you are actually the person who reminded me when I was over at your house for WrestleMania last year that you can just buy Doritos and have them in the house. Like, I had forgotten that. I was like, man, I love Doritos, but I haven't been to Subway in a while, so I don't know where I'm going to get them. And then you just had, like, a bag of Cool Ranch Doritos at the house. When we were talking the other day before I went to get dinner and go to the store, I was like, hey, man, I think I'm going to get some Doritos. Aiden's too sick to stop me. So that is what I have been up to this week, Matt. What are you up to?
Well, I got a couple things to check in with. First and foremost, Chris, I have some bad news.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's great news for what we've been trying to do. Bad news for us. We officially have to read Holy Terror.
No. I mean, good, but no.
For listeners that don't know, we've been asking people to donate to the Council for American Islamic Relations, CARE. We said that if we reached a $500 goal, we would read Holy Terror. If people donated that much, and sent us their receipts. And we've had several listeners in the past week, when we brought it up again, send in receipts showing that they had made donations. And we had one listener send in a huge one. Christopher Gary.
Oh, really?
Put us over the top.
Okay.
A donation of several hundred dollars.
Wow! Okay, that's awesome. Thank you, Christopher. That's really great. And I should say, even though we have met our goal, that is an organization that we support. And so, if you feel like continuing to support CARE, that would be super awesome of you. But now we gotta read Holy Terror, Matt.
Yes. So sometime in the month of February, each of us is going to read that book, and it'll be the first thing we rank on the February Every Story Ever Special. Mark my words.
Is it going to be the first thing, or is it going to be like the one we build to?
I think it's got to be number one. People donated money to an organization because we asked them to. We've got to give them what they paid for and do it up front on the next Every Story Ever Special. So we will read that book, and we will rank it. That is number one on the check front. That's kind of a podcast housekeeping check. The second check is that I can talk a little more freely about the thing that I vaguely talked about a couple weeks ago where I'm flying to Dallas. I'm going to be flying to Dallas. It'll actually already have happened by the time this episode goes up, and it is the reason that I can't edit our interview segment. I'm going to have to deeply and quickly edit this part of the show because getting on a plane on Friday, flying to Dallas, and then returning on Monday. And in the middle of that, I'm going to be with Richard from Zeus Comics, Richard Neal, and Ken Lowry. Richard does recaps of the various shows on the Dallas CW station. The superhero shows, I should say. So he'll tell you what happened last week on Supergirl, or The Flash, or Arrow, or Legends of Tomorrow.
That's pretty amazing.
It's like a minute long, and they air these little recaps right before the next episode starts to catch people up. It's really clever, and it's really great that they get Richard from a comic book shop to do it, because Richard's really personable and charismatic. They asked him for more content. One piece of content, and we have written the scripts for it, and the reason I know I can say all this is because Richard tweeted about it. We've written the scripts for it. King Oblivion PhD is going to be appearing in character in some segments for the CW. Not the national CW that I'm aware of, even though it could be syndicated, it could be sent to other stations, but at least in the Dallas, Texas area, King Oblivion PhD will be appearing on television sets on the CW stations. I don't know when they're supposed to air, I don't know any of that, but I have seen the script and it is very funny. And it is several different segments.
Matt, is King Oblivion also going to be recapping last week's episode of the DC shows?
No, these are totally different. I don't know how much exactly I should say about what these segments are, but I will say that they are structured as an interview.
Interesting. Okay, interesting.
King Oblivion will be interviewed. I'm excited to go shoot them. I'm hoping I do not embarrass myself, and that I portray King Oblivion in the manner that he deserves. I'll talk more about that when they're public and available and all that stuff, but that's what I'm going to be going to Dallas to do this weekend, and I think it'll be a lot of fun. All right, Chris, let's make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
My recommendation is actually going to be an extremely specific one. So I think maybe like a very small number of our listeners are going to be able to enjoy this recommendation. I mentioned this weekend that I drove over to Charlotte, a shockingly long drive for being in the same state. And I did the Charlotte Minicon. And then afterwards, like, I was feeling kind of lousy. Aiden was starting to feel it. Chad was tired and you know, has kids at home. But at the last minute, before we decided to come back to our homes, we did go ahead and decide to grab dinner together. But we wanted something quick, so we went over to JJ's Red Hots.
Ah, the classic hot dog home of Rico Renzi.
Next time you and me are in Charlotte, buddy, whether that's in June, whether we decide to get a hotel room and watch WrestleMania this year, I don't know. We're going to JJ's Red Hots because it is mad delicious. It's a hot dog place, but they have a litany of specialty dogs. And I gotta say, You will know Rico Renzi probably most famously as a colorist whose work is on some really great stuff, including the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl from Marvel Comics. You may also know him as one of the dudes behind Heroes Gone. But more specifically, he created a hot dog for the JJ's menu. And I think it might have been part of some kind of competition. I don't know. But it's called A Dog Walks Into a Bar. And that thing has bacon, pimento cheese, and fried jalapenos on it. And it's thebomb.com. It might be thebomb.biz.
With thebomb.co.uk?
Thebomb.edu. K-12.
Thebomb.gov? Whoa, no. Never mind.
No, it's not thebomb.gov. It's a delicious hot dog. And Aiden had like a bratwurst, and I also had like a coney, which is a Cincinnati-style hot dog, which a lot of people have their doubts about, but it's the one thing I miss about Ohio. If you are in the Charlotte area, or if you are planning to come to Heroes Con, which I think Matt and I would both highly recommend, as it's, you know, the show that we do every year, and it's a show that we have always loved going to, get your ass to JJ's Red Hots! It's so good! That's it. That's my rec.
Well, my recommendation is, look, more than likely, if you've wanted to see this, you've seen it. But I only recently got to watch it because I only recently got access to HBO Now. So I haven't been able to watch HBO stuff in a while, but I now have an HBO Now account that I can use. I finally sat down and watched most of, I still haven't watched the last couple episodes, but I watched most of Westworld. If you have wanted to watch Westworld, like I said, you've probably seen it and know that it's a very good show. And if you haven't wanted to watch it, then you haven't watched it, and that's fine too. But I do enjoy it a lot. You may remember when Ed Brubaker was on War Rocket Ajax. He was working on the writing staff for Westworld well before its premiere. There is definitely some Ed Brubaker in that show, in the way that the characters talk to each other, in the way that certain things are hidden and certain relationships don't come to light until later. It's also a very Nolan-y TV show because Jonathan Nolan, Christopher Nolan's brother, is one of the co-creators and writes quite a few of the episodes. It does a good job of balancing the future-y sci-fi stuff in the offices and in the places where the various robotic automatons, or really synthetic humans, are repurposed and programmed and all that stuff. And then having plots occurring within the Wild West theme park that the show is named after. So it goes back and forth between those two places a lot. There's a lot of intrigue and mystery on the show. There are a good number of surprises and a surprisingly big ensemble cast. I don't even know if I could say that there's a lead character. The characters that probably get the most screen time are Evan Rachel Wood's character, who is one of the quote-unquote hosts, one of the synthetic humans in the park. And then Jeffrey Wright, a War Rocket Ajax favorite, a movie fighter's favorite, plays one of the kind of the head scientists, one of the head behaviorists who works at the park. If somehow you haven't watched Westworld yet, because you don't have access to an HBO account or you haven't dropped money for it on iTunes or whatever, it's definitely worth watching. Even if, you know, you wait until it pops up on Amazon Prime, and I know the HBO shows take a while to show up on Amazon Prime, but if you have that and it shows up there, definitely give it a watch, because I've been watching it and really, really digging it. It's a little bit of a slow burn, but I think that makes the payoffs that come later worth it even more. That's my rec. Sorry if I'm like however many months late with it. I finally just got around to watching it.
Well, Matt, you can rest safely knowing that I haven't seen it because it does not have any Zords.
You don't know that. You don't know that.
Oh, I don't, though. Is that one of the mysteries? Who plays the Zord on Westworld?
You don't know if Ed Harris turns into a Zord at some point.
God, I hope so.
All right, those are our checks and recs. Chris, let's talk about some of the comics that came out this week. Chris, I feel like it's been a while since we talked about a Valiant book. Even though
it has,
I feel like we keep up with those comics fairly regularly and like a lot of them.
They're generally among my favorite comics. And I feel like it's very rare that we actually talk about them. Probably because I tend to catch up with them. You know, I tend to wait until I've got a stack to get through them. But yeah, we have one to talk about this week.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about Faith number 8.
This is a prelude to the next story arc.
Faith is being haunted. This is by Jody Hauser and Joe Eisma doing the writing and the art.
With the fantasy sequences by Marguerite Sauvage, which she's been on the book since the start doing the fantasy sequences.
Really great. She's really great. And the Joe Eisma art is good, too. It does have a little bit of a weird look to it, almost like uninked or inked in a weird way. The coloring is just, it's not what I'm used to. I don't even think it's necessarily bad. It's just a little different from what
there's no black lines.
Yeah.
Everything is like all of the outlines are just done in a darker shade of whatever it is they're outlining. So like if a character is wearing like a yellow sweater, then it's outlined in just a darker yellow. It's a weird look. It's an interesting look, but it's a weird one.
Yeah, I don't know if I approve of it or not. I think I'm too stuck on black outlines for everything in my comic books. But anyway, the story in this, and that's no knock on Joe Eisma. He does a great job. The story in this is really interesting because Faith is being literally haunted by the ghosts of her past. It's a common thread in comic books, but this makes it full-on literal. The ghosts of her parents and former teammates are just there in her house to the point, and it's become such a problem for her that she's had to call in a coworker of hers to come help her out with it, which yeah. leads to some comedy, honestly.
And this is something that I really love about Faith, because her day job is that she's essentially working for BuzzFeed. She's essentially like a comics and pop culture critic, which I think makes her very easy for me to relate to. But all of her coworkers found out very early on in the series that she is secretly, you know, Zephyr, the superhero. So I love that when she when she's being haunted by these ghosts, which is a very superhero problem, she calls someone she knows from work, and her justification is, yeah, but you watch horror movies, so I didn't think this would freak you out. I thought you could help me with this.
Honestly, it's a very you-me dynamic. Faith is very you, and the coworker who's, I can't remember that character's name because I'm terrible with character names, but the coworker is very me. And her yeah. reactions.
It's extremely you and me. like I was surprised that she didn't go, hey Paige, what do I not like?
Yeah, it's Paige. Okay, I'm bad with character names, and I apologize for that. That got resolved pretty quickly. You know, we got the comedy from it, and then it got resolved pretty quickly. And then we moved ahead into the supervillain part of the book, which leads to an interesting circle back around to what this Faith series has been at least partially about ever since the miniseries that kicked everything off with the movie star Chris showing up at the end.
This is leading into Faithless, which they've kind of described it as Valiant's like first ever take on the Sinister Six. Because it's all of Faith's past villains showing up and kind of teaming up to destroy her once and for all. And I gotta say, if you like Spider-Man, like if you like the classic Spider-Man, you know, living in the city, having problems, you know, trying to stay upbeat, but, you know, bad things keep happening and trying not to be worn down. Like, that's what Faith is doing better than I think any other book on the market right now. Like, it has that sensibility. The difference, of course, being that, like, Peter Parker is kind of inherently pessimistic, you know, like he's always like, oh, what, all this bullshit happens to me, whereas Faith is inherently and like bubblingly optimistic and honest and forthright. And I think you get that in this episode or in this issue, because when she's haunted by ghosts of like people that she has cared about that have died, she just immediately goes, oh, this is real ghosts and I need help to deal with this. I need to call someone from work. So I would say definitely, definitely check this out. I feel like this is it's not the best place to jump on, but if you're planning on jumping on for Faithless, and I really feel like you should, because I think that story is going to be awesome, this feels like a good prelude to it that'll help you get caught up.
And it introduces you to the supervillain, at least that's in this issue, the Vine, who feels more convincingly like a young adult who is a supervillain than most other attempts to do it.
Yes.
She is a young villain who isn't a gimmick. She feels like a person. A person you could know who would be like, you know, 20. And that's a testament to Jody Houser, I think. When you have so many writers in comics who are, you know, older men trying to write teenagers, a lot of it feels forced and a lot of it feels gimmicky and a lot of it feels pulled out of articles about the youth that may or may not be accurate. The Vine feels like a character who was created by somebody who is around young adults and knows what they talk, knows how they talk, knows why they might be a villain, and you know what would drive them. It rings a lot truer than so many other attempts to do what this is doing. While we're talking a little bit about comedy in comic books or humor in comic books, I want to talk about Batman number 16 by Tom King. And David Finch returns to the book on this. What you might expect from a Tom King, David Finch book is something serious and action-y. And there is a little action at the beginning of this issue in Arkham Asylum, because there's some stuff building up to the return of Bane, because this is Tom King's I Am Bane story. But I would say the centerpiece of this issue, and the lion's share of what this issue is, takes place in a fast food restaurant called Bat Burger. Bruce Wayne and all the current known living Robins, as well as Duke, meet there to eat. And a huge part of it is just this banter between Damian Wayne, Dick Grayson, Tim Drake, Duke, and Bruce Wayne. And also Bruce Wayne's reactions to being in a Batman-themed fast food restaurant where you can Jokerize your fries.
Oh, that's so good. Are we going to talk about the KGBLT?
The KGBLT is in there. The exchange is particularly... Oh, Jason Todd is there as well. I don't know if I mentioned that Jason Todd was there. The exchanges, particularly between Damian Wayne and Jason Todd, are very funny. A lot of that banter during that section of the book is just really well constructed. There's a lot of the Robins saying, "I don't want to die again." And Duke ends up reacting to that by saying, "Have you all died?" Which is pretty great. And then you get a pretty severe tone change by the end of this issue. I won't give away what the last page reveal is, but it really hits after everything that happens in the issue prior to it. I think it is probably a fake out, given all the context building up to it and all the discussion that's had. But it is a pretty shocking last page reveal after everything that comes before it. And it makes me interested in what sort of perspective and what sort of take on Bane Tom King is going to have this time. Because Tom King, a hallmark of this Batman run and a lot of his other comics, is, I don't know, almost what you would call lateral thinking about these characters. He never comes at them from a perfectly straightforward approach, which is something I really appreciate in his books. So I really enjoyed this issue, and it was not what I expected at all. From Tom King or David Finch, who does a surprisingly great job with a sequence that's not particularly action-y, that's very talky, but in an enjoyable way. You wanted to talk about one last book, and that is Transformers Lost Light number one.
Yes. Lost Light, as you probably know by now, is the book that has inherited from More Than Meets the Eye. It's essentially More Than Meets the Eye season 3. So we have this issue, which is by James Roberts, Jack Lawrence, and Joanna LaFuente, and it's super good. The premise here is that a cast of characters that includes Rodimus, that includes Megatron, Chrome Dome and Rewind, I think, are there. Drift is in the house, if you like Drift. They have all accidentally found themselves in the Functionalist universe. And the Functionalist universe is an alternate dimension where there never was a Megatron. So the old society of the Transformers from 4 million years ago never fell. The good news about that is that there was never a big 4 million year war that destroyed most of the galaxy. The bad news is that, like, Cybertron itself is a horrible nightmare place where your station in life is determined entirely by what you turn into. I've written about this before when I was writing The Transformed Man, and one of the things that I really, really appreciate about James Roberts is that he does this history of Cybertron and the history of the functionalists and the kind of weird oppression that they go through in such a really compelling and exciting way that never gets away from the fact that these are robots who turn into cars. And in fact, like, that's entirely what it's based on. And he makes that relatable and scary in the way that, like, the best sci-fi kind of does. So I'm really, really enjoying reading Lost Light. I think this is kind of the first time I've been following one of the Transformers books monthly as it comes out, and it's just really great stuff. If you want to catch up, it's obviously available digitally, but your store probably still has a Lost Light number one. And while I don't know if it's the best place to jump on, because it is, you know, season three of the ongoing story, if you've read my columns and you've heard us talk about it, and you, for some reason, don't want to go back and read those amazing, amazing comics that we've talked about before, you can jump into this and get some really interesting stuff out of it. I would absolutely recommend starting at the beginning, though. But this is good stuff. The one thing that happens in this issue, and this is a spoiler because it's literally the last panel of the book, they have, like, the functionalists, after 4 million years, have finally found out what Rung is for. Like, what the purpose of his alt mode is. Which is extremely exciting for me, and I never thought I would be this excited to find out what that fucking sticks deal was.
And that's going to do it for our comics segment. Chris, we're going to get to our interview segment with Einar and Matt in just a minute, but before we do that, we should talk to our listeners a little bit about our friends at Loot Crate.
That's right, Matt. Friendship is important. And I feel like over the past several weeks, several months even, that we've become good friends with Loot Crate. The only problem is, Loot Crate never invites us over to their house.
You know why that is, Chris?
I think I know why.
Loot Crate is always coming to your house. You don't even have to go anywhere. But it doesn't come uninvited. You invite it. And then it comes to your house and gives you stuff for a very low fee that is really cool. It's like building a relationship, which is pretty great because the February Loot Crate theme, because every month's Loot Crate is themed, is built. And Chris, do you want to hear some of the stuff that's in this box?
I would absolutely love to. Because look, even though we never go over to Loot Crate's place, Loot Crate's always bringing the heat. Not so much with, like, pizzas or wings or chips, but with stuff from our favorite franchises. So who do we have this time, Matt?
This is a Chris Sims box for February.
Ooh, I do love Chris Sims boxes, I gotta say.
It's got stuff from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers in it.
I do love the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
It's got stuff from Batman.
Yeah, I like that guy. That guy's my favorite.
Tetris is one of them.
You know, don't talk about it too often. Also a pretty big fan of Tetris.
And Lego Dimensions.
I like Legos, and I love the concept of spatial awareness.
Well, I feel like the Batman and Lego stuff is kind of synergistic with the Batman Lego movie coming out. There's also a t-shirt and pin in every box.
And I love having a covered and decorated torso.
Uh-huh. Yes. It's less than $20 a month to get these awesome, exclusive pop culture items. But here's the deal. You only have until February 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific time to subscribe and get the February crate. After that time, it's over. That's the cutoff. You do not get that box. You could get the next month's box, but you can't get that awesome February box. So here's what I would suggest, everybody. Instead of heading over to Loot Crate's house, which I'm sure Loot Crate has some cool stuff over there, has some pizza rolls, stuff you might like, invite Loot Crate over to your house, because Loot Crate's going to bring the heat, like Chris said, to your house. And the way that you do that is by going to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax and entering the code WarRocketAjax. And if you do that, not only do you get the heat coming to your house, you get $3 off your brand new subscription. So it's even less money than what I said earlier. What's better than that? Get all that cool stuff. Get a discount. Help us out here on War Rocket Ajax. Once again, it's lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax. Code War Rocket Ajax. Get your discount. All right, Chris. Let's talk to Einar and Matt.
Let's do it. Joining us for the program this week, we are very excited to have the two editors of the Not Forgotten anthology, something that Matt Wilson is actually a part of, that I'm sure we'll be talking about. You may recognize one of our guests this week as someone who has sent us candy in the past, and I'm very excited to completely derail this conversation and talk just about that. We have Einar Mausen and Matt Harding here. Guys, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, right up front, I want to issue an apology. I think Chris and I jointly are going to issue an apology for never saying Einar's name right on the show.
Not once.
Including on this very episode, we pronounced it Einar, because there's an E at the beginning, not an A. But that, you know, that's Icelandic pronunciation.
Don't make excuses, Matt. It's too late for excuses. We need to just embrace our failings as human beings.
That's right. So let me just retroactively say the whole time it's been Einar Mausen. Mm-hmm. Also, I have a question. So now that apology's been issued, I have a question for Matt Harding. Matt Harding, do you consider yourself to be broken? Because we had this conversation earlier in the show as well. Are you broken, Matt Harding?
Well, that got really really deep really fast. No, I'm all right, man. Why?
Okay.
Okay, so your hashtag, all right, man, Matt Harding.
I'm doing like okay. You know what? Actually, I think there is something in me that's broken. My name, Matt Harding, has caused me a lot of pain over my lifetime, and that's because there is another Matt Harding who dances all over the world. Have you seen this guy? Where in the world is Matt?
Oh, that okay.
Oh, that
I did.
Guy. Yeah.
I did not know that guy's name was Matt to begin with.
Yes.
Maybe I did, and
Matt
I certainly didn't know that his name was Matt Harding.
So every interview I've ever gone to for a job, every time, even at a signing I went to, they put a picture of him on the poster once. And every time I go to a job interview, they always ask me if I'm him, right? One time I had a table at a convention, and a guy came up to me trying to get stuff back from Matt Harding that wasn't me. But just recently, and this is what has caused me to be a little bit broken, is that there was a person who contacted me, right? So just a little bit of a beginner of this is somebody did made a little short documentary about me being a comic book artist, and they put it online. And right after that happened, somebody, a teacher from Massachusetts, called me up or like hit me up on Facebook and asked me to come and talk to all the students, right? And because of my great video, right? And she wanted me to come and talk to her students about doing what I do and all this stuff. She says to me, do you want to come out to Massachusetts? We'll pay for the plane, get a place for you to stay, and, you know, you'll talk to students, it'll be great. And I was like, yes, I will do this. And so she goes and she talks to the principal, and the principal approves everything. I'm, you know, like, I've never been to Massachusetts, I can't wait to go. And so I go to my girlfriend, and I'm like, we're going to Massachusetts, like, pack your bags, you know, we're going on vacation, it's going to be great. And we start making all these plans to, like, go to Salem and stuff like that. 3 hours later, I get a message back on Facebook, and she goes, wait a second, is this the dancing Matt Harding? So yes, that has made me a little sad, and I guess I am a little bit broken. I don't know how you guys knew that.
Well,
I came into this thing, you guys read my fortune right off the bat.
I don't know. Well, the broken thing comes from Matt Hardy, the professional wrestler who I'm surprised you also haven't heard about and who may break you further. I wanted to talk to you guys about the Not Forgotten Anthology. Because I know generally about it because I wrote a story for it that Rodrigo Vargas did some awesome art for.
Damn right,
with letters by Josh Kroc. But if you wouldn't mind just telling our listeners a little bit about what the concept of this book is, because I think it's really clever, but maybe not necessarily obvious from the title. So what is Not Forgotten all about?
Sure. The Not Forgotten Anthology, well, here's the elevator pitch. It's a celebration of those other Golden Age comic book heroes that didn't catch on for whatever reason, like the also-rans of Superman and Batman. And we kind of wanted to dig up those goofy, weird old characters and dust them off and, you know, see if we could tell some fun and interesting new stories with them.
Now, aside from the legal ease of doing a book full of public domain characters, which is a great selling point, was there something else that particularly drew you guys to the idea of doing a comic full of public domain Golden Age characters? Like, and were there any particular characters that, you know, you thought fondly of or that drew you to this idea?
So, like, when we first started talking about this, we were just kind of doing some research on the internet, like, finding out what kind of, you know, heroes there were. And, you know, you find your normal ones, you know, like Shazam used to be one. But when we really dug into it, we found a couple archives. And in those archives, there was hundreds of these crazy characters, right? And one of the things that I like to do when I'm writing comics or when I'm working on comics is I like to have them be kind of crazy. Like, I grew up with, like, Grant Morrison and stuff like that. And the thing that I noticed about these stories is that they were unapologetic in how creative and just batshit bonkers they were, right? Like, there was just the most insane characters. Like, there's the flying saucer. I think he's, like, the fat man flying saucer man or something.
Fat man, the human flying saucer?
Yes,
that's created by Otto Binder and CC Beck, a favorite of mine.
Yeah, that dude is awesome. He's just a fat guy who turns into a flying saucer, right? Like, that's his power. One of the characters that I wrote a story for that my friend Vincent Kakua is drawing is this guy who was in two stories, and
back
I think
in the
40s, yeah. And his name is Pharaoh, the intergalactic detective. And he basically fights against werewolves and vampires from Pluto. And he has, like, a ray gun that's like a space ray gun. It just shoots lasers and stuff. But then he takes a pill and it turns him into, like, a giant gorilla wearing, like, you know, like, detective uniform and stuff. It's just crazy, right? Like, so that's what I like about him, is that there's just all this really crazy imaginative stories.
Yeah, he's a private detective who fights space vampires and turns into a gorilla when the going gets tough.
That's correct. And he's damn serious about it, too.
One thing that I know from the submission process for this is you kind of gave people who were submitting story pitches more or less carte blanche to pick the characters that they wanted. You know, find a character in the public that you're reasonably sure is in the public domain, send in a pitch for it, and then Einar, you did a little checking to make sure that they're in the public domain. But, you know, you gave us some freedom. I ended up choosing a character called the Scarlet Avenger because I couldn't resist the idea of the man who can't smile, which is the character I ended up going with. But or I guess the man who never smiles is his tagline, but he literally cannot smile. Did you guys learn about any public domain characters, Golden Age characters, that you didn't really have any prior knowledge of through the process of having people submit stories to this book?
Absolutely, yeah.
And go ahead, Einar.
Let me see. I'm trying to find. Jeez, a off the top of my head. Like, I'm trying to think of the weirdest one. I think maybe, yeah, probably my favorite story that popped up was a character called Atomic Tot. He's a toddler who eats these special vitamins that give him the physique of a bodybuilder. He is absolutely terrifying to behold. And there's a story with him in the book that's written by Angie Ehlers and illustrated by Nathan Schwartz, who is currently heading up the art for the new Toe Jam and Earl book. And he draws just this gross, veiny, bulked up, tiny little bodybuilder body with the head of a 4-year-old on top of it. And it is gross and it is delightful.
Man, that was quite a find, because Googling for Atomic Tot, at best you get one issue of a comic from 1949 that's for sale on Amazon. So that was a real find for that one. What I used was there's actually an online database of Golden Age comics characters who are most likely in the public domain, even though I think there are some on there that are not. But it kind of lists them as public domain characters. So that was a great resource for me, and I assume for you guys too.
Yeah. There's some kind of a fine print that says that, like, the comics that they originally appeared in are within the public domain, so you can actually reprint those without fear. But then taking some of those characters and try to make new stories with them, that'll get you into trouble. Like the Red Bee and Blue Beetle. Those are both DC characters currently, but the original stories, you can do whatever you want with those.
Yeah, Captain Marvel's one of those, too, where every issue of Captain Marvel Adventures is in the public domain, but you cannot do a new story with Billy Batson. That is off limits.
Exactly.
Blue Beetle, one of the most interesting ones that we came across was the Blue Beetle, because everybody knows him as like a DC character, right? But there's certain iterations of him that you can use, like the original, very original iteration of him. You can do a story of that character, but there's been so many different versions of him since he was bought that you basically had to stay away from him. I just remember we were talking to John Morris, and he's kind of like our he knows everything. He's like he knows everything about all the copyright stuff. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was even saying that anytime there's a new addition to the copyright law, he actually rereads the entire thing.
That's what he told us. I don't know if that's true, but I'm not going to call him on it.
So he's like an expert, but I guess he had told us all about the very interesting case of the Blue Beetle and how he's safe to use in certain ways.
Well, if anybody would know, it would be John.
Yeah, that's reading the entire copyright law sounds like a very John Morris thing to do.
For our listeners that don't know who John Morris is, he's the author of the League of Regrettable Superheroes, and also co-host of the Columbo podcast that Chris and I have been on in the past. But he knows those Golden Age characters for sure.
Yes, he does.
Well, you brought up John, and there's an interesting thing about public domain Golden Age superheroes that I think goes a little bit beyond just the ability to, you know, legally get those comics from the Digital Comics Museum or reprint them or work with those characters, in that they've been experiencing a real renaissance lately. Like, Craig Yeo has been doing a lot of stuff. He just put out the Super Weird Heroes hardcover through IDW. John's book obviously has a ton of those weird Golden Age superheroes. And you know, like, I'm a guy who's been writing about weird old comics, and there's nothing I love more than public domain Golden Age comics for weird stories. But the thing that draws me to them as a reader, and I'm curious to see if this is true for you as well, is that it's very fun to kind of read a bunch of people who don't really know what superhero comics are yet, trying to figure it out as they go along.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. There's a childlike wonder to the whole thing where, you know, they're making the rules up as they go along. It's like, yeah, bang, bang, like your detective is dead now. No, he's not, because I ate this pill and now I'm a gorilla and I'm going to stomp on your vampires. And it's very, like, kind of stream of consciousness. It's very, like, yeah, it's like when you were a kid and you just made the stuff up on the spot and you didn't take the time to ever question the logic of any of it. It made sense when you were four.
Early superhero comics are bad improv. The superheroes in those comics are all people who instead of saying yes and, they say no. So when they get shot, they say no. Or, like, they have weird ways of knowing everything that they couldn't conceivably know, except through the most extraordinary means. There's nothing like them being produced now, because superheroes now have to exist within these universes, and there are rules. And seeing those stories where there are no rules at all, it's like the Wild West.
Exactly. Well, I guess that
codified today.
I guess that leads to my question, which I think you are in a position to answer as well, Matt Wilson. What do you think the draw is there for modern readers? Like, people who have grown up with not just, like, superheroes who have the rules of the superhero genre, but who, you know, if they're our age, you know, or younger, they've grown up with superheroes that are specifically kind of trying to defy and react against those rules.
I think, in reading a lot of these older stories, is there's a huge sense of fun to it. You could tell that the creators were just having a good time, right? And I think that,
or they were desperate to make rent.
But it was a different time, you know. It was a different era, and you could. I guess the best way for me to put it is that, like, when we first started doing this, like, it was like a fun idea, you know. It was like, find these superheroes, redesign them, you know. That's fun. But when I was reading through these old comics, I really started to realize that there was a real sense of history to this that has been kind of lost, you know, for the most part. And there's all these creators who did all this really fun, like, work. And as, like, comic book readers, it's almost like seeing your history, you know. As a comic book creator, it's like seeing your history. And it's this huge, just section, like this huge, massive section of stuff that has been forgotten about, for the most part. And I think it's almost a responsibility to make sure that, you know, it's not.
That it's not forgotten?
Thank you. I was hoping so. I put it out there and somebody bit.
It's the name of the book. It's the name of the book, everybody. And Matt Wilson, like, you and I haven't really talked about this yet, but, like, was that your experience, like, kind of going through to write it as well?
Well, I think part of it is, you know, these are classic characters, Golden Age characters, viewed through the lens of modern creators, like creators who have been reading comics of the last 25 years, in addition to Golden Age stories, which I've read plenty of, and I went back and read the Golden Age Scarlet Avengers stories, which are really, really odd comic books, where his power comes as much from having a network of informants than anything else. But I think, you know, bringing a modern sensibility to these characters is part of it. And then also, there's a certain relevance right now to comics from the 30s and 40s that I don't even know was a part of the original idea of this comic, but those comics are relevant in 2017 that in a way that they wouldn't have been or weren't even a few years ago. So I really feel like there is, you know, an appeal for sure. I don't know if you guys agree, but I feel that way.
Yeah, not to bum everybody out, but with the state of the world as it is, you know, we need more superheroes these days than ever.
So I'm curious, for all three of you, what was, like, the weirdest thing that you saw in a comic when you went to do research and you started, like setting up this anthology and kind of picking out the heroes that you wanted to use? Like, when you went to do the research, what was like what jumped out as the like most bonkers thing you saw? And Einar, I'd love to start with you on this one.
Okay, fair enough. I think aside from Atomic Tot, who is gross and weird and delightful,
it sounds horrifying. By the way,
I saw Nathan Schwartz's like his sort of pitch art for him, and I thought, oh, that is gross. And then I looked up the original art for the guy, and I went, oh, that is gross. He looked even weirder back in the 40s. But for me, I think, I don't know how weird he was. He is, in, like, relatively speaking, but at the time I remember just being absolutely fascinated with Brad Spencer or Wonder Man, who he's kind of a ripoff between Doc Savage and Superman at the same time. He's got, like, a weird teleporter cannon that shoots him up to... And he fights, like, the denizens of the Lilith, which is a hidden planet behind the moon. And he fights the Empress of Lilith, who is also called Lilith. And her consort is called the Immortal Emperor, and he looks like a... He's got a... It's actually a helmet that makes him look like an overdeveloped Pez dispenser. And there's this weird guy called Dr. Voodoo, and they fight everything from, like, mummies and gargoyles to Huns on this planet, and it just gets weirder with every goddamn page.
Matt Harding, how about you? Anything jump out?
You know, the one that I liked was Phantoma.
Oh, I love
and
Phantoma.
She's more of a popular one. But she's, you know, she's this woman who's in the jungles, right? And would to protect her village from evil, she turns into this crazy, like, skull-faced, like, blonde-haired. Like, the only thing that stays normal is her blonde, beautiful blonde waving hair. And then she would be, like, this crazy, like, zombie ghoul that would, like, kill people. And I always thought that she was pretty cool.
How about you, Matt?
Well, for me, I mainly read Scarlet Avengers stuff because I pegged him as the character that I wanted to use right away. And the thing that I was like, I absolutely have to put that in my comic. Aside from him just having like an office with like a view screen that was a communications device that he talked to all his agents who gave him information, he could just run up on the roof of his building and there was a plane up there, and it just like in a little garage, and he would just fly the plane off his roof. Because why the fuck not, right? Like, it's again, it's that like no rules thing, where it's just like, yeah, okay, Scarlet Avenger, he just flies a plane from the roof of his building.
But Matt, where does he keep his plane?
It's inside a little shed on the roof.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah,
silly question.
It makes perfect sense. But I wanted to ask you guys, Einar and Matt, about Kickstarter. This anthology is on Kickstarter. It actually launched today, the day that this episode of War Rocket Ajax is going up. And you guys have both been involved in Kickstarter projects before. Matt, you've funded your comic Pop Apocalypse on there. And Einar, you've been part of a few anthologies. You know, having done a few Kickstarters in the past, and Matt, particularly having done Kickstarters specifically for your own comics, I wonder what's different about an anthology Kickstarter and what have you learned to avoid on Kickstarter?
T-shirts? You want to avoid T-shirts?
Yeah. Fuck those things.
Yeah, those things suck, man. Those are just a... Those are a lot. There's a lot of hassle with T-shirts. I think doing an anthology with people can be a blessing and a curse. It depends on who you're doing it with. I headed up one that was a Figments, it was called, and it was for... I went to a college and I ran their comic book club and we all did one. But the reason that one sucked is because as soon as the Kickstarter went up and the semester was over, all the people who contributed were just, they just vanished. You couldn't get a hold of them. So, like, I had to, like, pretty much run a lot of it myself, which is hard to do when you need the people to be a part of it. And this one feels a lot more like people who are in it. They want to do it. They're throwing out all these ideas. They're advertising for it. We're on a podcast with someone who's in it. And it just seems a lot more of like a group community thing. And that is very important, I think.
Einar, anything to add? Because I know you've done anthology stuff in the past, anthology Kickstarters. You were part of the Bay Area anthology, for example.
That's right, yeah. I was not as directly involved with that Kickstarter as I am with this one. But from an outsider's perspective, I learned quite a lot. I think the most important thing that I learned from that one is that you need to sweat the small stuff. Make sure that you got to make sure the people who are backing your Kickstarter know that you care about what you're doing. We had a member on our team who didn't. Let me try that again. So when we were packaging our Kickstarter backer rewards, there were a couple of things, a couple of packages that we forgot to put, like a little postcard and like a sticker that were supposed to go with the book. We forgot to package those at one point, and one of our members was like, you know what, I don't think the people are even going to notice that it's missing, which I found personally insulting, and I had to take that person aside and just tell them that, you know, maybe they won't care, but I care, and you should care, because our professional reputations are on this thing, so... Every little piece of detail is important. It's important to me, and we can't gamble on people not caring, because you know they put money into this thing. That tells me that they care. So we owe it to them to show them that we also care.
Yeah, my experience with being a Kickstarter patron is that like you already have my goodwill. Because I'm backing it, right? Like I want to see it happen. Like I'm giving it money. I'm essentially pre-ordering it. Like I'm showing my faith that way. And I feel like as a creator, that kind of goodwill from an audience is something that you really want to preserve going forward. Like you don't want to lose that goodwill in any way that you can, even if it's just not being communicative or not like you know throwing in the bookmark. That maybe somebody was really excited about using a bookmark that week.
Absolutely, yeah. You don't know why people backed your project, so you know, don't gamble on it.
Getting back to the stories in the anthology, I'm a little curious what because again, you guys, I feel like gave the creators a lot of leeway and leverage to do with the stories they wanted to do. And we talked a little bit about, you know, Golden Age or stories with Golden Age characters with a modern sensibility. Did more creators try to mimic a Golden Age style, or did more tend to put those characters in a more modern context, or did you see a good mix of that? Or, you know, if somebody buys the book, can they expect to see kind of comics that look more like Golden Age comics, or can they expect to see, you know, these old characters put in new scenarios more often?
I know for my teams, there was like the general idea of starting where people wanted to kind of emulate the older style. But as the ideas progressed, it became very like a mix between that and modern stuff. So like we see colors that are like, you know, predominantly like neon 80s colors, with having a story that has language from, you know, the 30s, and then with a subject matter that's from, you know, the last 5 years, you know. So I know for my stories, at least, a lot of them are modernized, but keeping little bits and pieces from past eras.
Mostly people were, you know, interested in innovating and like just taking what they thought was fun from those past comics, bringing it up to modern storytelling and playing around with it. We have one story that's particularly kind of a throwback that hews to the traditional storytelling of the Golden Age, featuring the character Marvolo, who's kind of a prototype Doctor Strange character. And it's written by Edwin Lopez from Sweden, and it's illustrated by a guy who calls himself Bobby Trauma. He's from Nigeria. And it's you know, it's about this, you know, this problem-solving super wizard who helps people out in Mexico, of all places. And it's very much a throwback in storytelling, whereas there are other stories that play around more with more modern storytelling conventions.
Well, bringing that up, like those creators being from, you know, different countries, and then the story taking place in yet another country, makes me, you know, the Kickstarter anthology, the Kickstarter comic anthology, I feel like is a place where creators from a lot of different places can come together in a way, in like an independent book, in a way that they weren't used to they couldn't do before. Like, you know, I am born in the South, raised in a glass, and Rodrigo, who I did my story with, is in Chile, and we're working on another comic together. Is this a highly international book? Is because it seems like virtually, you know, every creator is from a different country, a different place. Is that something you guys really wanted to make happen with Not Forgotten?
Well, I don't think we initially went out of our way to find international talent, but international talent came to us. I think maybe because one of us is from from crazy Europe, but. Yeah, we've got Swedish creators, Danish creators, Nigerian. Matt, you've got folks from all over as well.
I think so. One thing is that this anthology started in San Francisco because a couple of us went to school there at the Academy of Art. And when we first met up for this, we kind of like called some of our friends, and I think. The interesting thing about that school and that city in particular is that people from all over the world go there, like live there, and it's a pretty big like mix of culture. And I think kind of it grew from that. You know what I mean? Like
that's true,
the people we had interested in the book grew from that, and it just kind of worked out where we had a lot of different people. Like we have a guy. Marco, who's from Italy, who's really good. He's doing this story called Lucky 13, and he's like one of the most talented artists I've ever seen. And he's an Italian comic book artist.
And Matt Harding, you're working with our buddy Seed, who's from
Seed Argemond is from Dubai. And the interesting thing about him is that in Dubai. They have a very young comic book industry that's just starting. Like they're, I think, on their second. They've had 2 years of Comic-Con, and I think it's their third year coming up. And they don't have really any publishers. There's one publisher who's just starting. And the interesting thing about Saeed is that he was telling me that there hasn't been like a Dubai comic book artist who has been published in America yet. And or at least, you know, published in a big way in America yet, and so that's pretty cool to have him being published in this book as well.
Well, Einar, you mentioned that you're from quote unquote crazy Europe up there in Iceland.
Wild and crazy guy.
How did you and Matt come together to be the editors on this project?
Well, we met in school because I was studying at the Academy of Art over in San Francisco, and I think we met at Matt's his like debut of Pop Apocalypse. And we hung out a little bit at the point back then and became friends on Facebook. And then when I went back to visit San Francisco, in 2016. We talked on Facebook about doing this anthology. So we decided to meet up and see who else we could get along with us.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, and then things sort of ballooned from there.
And since you brought it up about the craziness of Iceland, Einar, I have to ask you one question about Iceland in general, since you have a lot of experience there, and you sent us a box of Icelandic candy. What is it with the licorice?
What is up with the licorice, dude?
All right, I'm sorry. Jeez, I'm just,
No, like I'm not blaming you, but there was like I assumed that what we got in that box was a representative sampling of the candy aisle, and there was just so much licorice.
No, yeah, absolutely. I remember when I first came to San Francisco, and I asked and my mom was going to send me a care package, and he was like, "Do you want any candy?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure. Send me a sampler, so I can share it with my friends here, and impress them with my exotic ways." And that's when I realized that was when it hit me, like, "Oh wow, Icelandic candy is like 80% licorice. How did that happen?" It's a mystery to me as well. I don't get it.
You know, Einar, I'm a big fan of licorice.
Oh well, in that case.
Hook me up, man.
Yeah, will do. I should just be glad I didn't send you any brendivine, which is a licorice-based liquor.
What?
Huh.
It's like also known as the Black... It is also known as the Black Death.
Like a liqueur? It's
yeah,
like a liqueur?
Like a schnapps.
Okay. Huh, okay. I couldn't.
I couldn't either.
I will say those wafer bars with the coconut on them were pretty great, though. It evened out.
Can I be real with you guys for a second?
I wish you would.
When you were listing off all the different places in this world that the creators of this anthology were coming from, the only thing I could think was, I wish everyone would send me a box of snacks. But I'm very hungry. I've been sick lately, and I'm just getting over it so my appetite's back. So maybe that's why. Maybe that's the problem.
Well once snack situation takes off, I'll be sure to contact all of my creators and tell them to send you guys some samples.
Oh, we're so close. We're so close.
We're so glad we have you as a connect, Einar. Now it's time for us to kick it over to our listeners who have asked some questions on Twitter. Here's how you can do that. First of all, fly to Iceland and become reconstructed as a human being that is 80% licorice. Then go to twitter.com and sign up for an account. Follow the Matt D. Wilson, that's me, and the ISB, that's Chris. Wait until Thursday night at approximately 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 6:30 Pacific. And wait for us to put out the call for questions. And you can ask a question just like the ones you're about to hear for Matt and Einar. The first one we have comes from JoeMama75 on Twitter. Hayden with many exclamation marks. They want to know when the Lady Satan and Phantoma team-up book is occurring.
Just as soon as you send me a script that doesn't require the adult content tag.
I do wonder, I was going to ask this, if you guys think that, you know, this would be considered like the first volume of Not Forgotten. Is it something that you guys want to keep doing after this anthology, or do you consider it kind of a one-off?
We've been focusing so much on getting this book out that we haven't really talked about it yet. But there is so much content that personally I would be totally open to the idea. And I also have an answer for the guy who just sent us a question. Is if the money is right, I will personally draw that story for you.
Our next question comes from Mark Ostek on Twitter, who wants to know, how many submissions did you get that involved that Stardust fellow?
Just the one, funnily enough.
So there's a Stardust story in the book? We got Stardust the Super Wizard?
There is not, sadly. It's
okay.
We kind of went back and forth on that one, it was fun, but it didn't quite fit the tone of the rest of the book. So sadly, we had to discount it, but we did get the one.
All right, if there is a volume two, we'll get Stardust the Super Wizard.
Listen, hopefully. while I've been coughing and sucking on cough drops through this interview, I definitely did draw Stardust on my notepad. Because he's a character that it is impossible to draw off model.
Very true, sir.
All you need is a low neckline, and you have Stardust.
You just make sure those shoulders are six heads wide.
Next up, we have a question from One Word Long on Twitter. We talked a little bit about the weirdest public domain characters, but they want to know who your favorite pre-Superman public domain character is.
For me, it's probably the Phantom. I'm pretty sure he came out before Superman, but it's all kind of nebulous back then. He's very big in Sweden and Finland, of all places.
Are we talking about Billy Zane Phantom?
Sure. Yes, the one that Billy Zane is based on. I remember when I was a kid, my first exposure to the Phantom was actually that weird cartoon, the Phantom 2040.
Oh, I love that cartoon.
Oh, yeah, that show is so weird.
Super weird.
So great.
It was produced by like the same people who did the Aeon Flux TV show. And then there was that the video game that came out on the Genesis, and that was my jam for a while there.
Phantom, you're all right, Einar. Phantom does predate Superman. The first Phantom strip was in February of 1936.
Oh, wow.
So, predate Superman by a couple years.
For me, Matt? I used to listen to radio shows a lot, like recorded radio shows. And I liked The Shadow just because he was a superhero-ish. Like, he just was the most messed up... vigilante out there, but he was really kind of like the only one, you know, and I kind of liked his design, and when I was a kid, I liked the movie, and I think he's pre-Superman. My absolute favorite is Mr. Monster, and I think he came out after Superman, but I wrote a story for this book that has him in it.
He's scary like a dude on the cover.
Yeah.
Well, the Phantom definitely does fit the bill. Phantom debuted in 1931, so you're good on that one. Let's see about Mr. Monster. I'm not sure. Oh, yeah, Mr. Monster was from the 1940s, so he came a little after.
Yeah.
But those are good ones. One last question. This one's also from JoeMama75. They want to know, when are we going to see Atlas's other secret workouts?
Well, did you, you know, follow the instructions? Did you pay the fee and do the workouts? Because, you know, that only unlocks for advanced students.
That's right. You gotta do beginner before you can see any of the intermediate and advanced contents.
Obviously, Hayden. Come on, get with the program.
The Atlas program.
You gotta master that one where you flex your arm and then, like, slowly put it down over and over. It's you work on your biceps for 30 years, and then maybe you can get to the second workout.
Mm-hmm. The one where you just hold up a bunch of people, that one's great.
That's a good one.
All right, that's going to do it for our Twitter questions. Our guests have been A&R Malson and Matt Harding. They, once again, are the editors of the Not Forgotten Anthology, which you can go support on Kickstarter right now. And before we let you go, A&R Matt, please tell all our listeners where they can find you on the internet.
You can find me on Twitter at A&R Malson. That's E-I-N-A-R-M-A-S-S-O-N. Matt?
You can find me on WordPress. I have Harding World is my WordPress, and it's like a blog. And then Pop Apocalypse on Tumblr, which is just pop and apocalypse as one word. And that's my like online comic. And if you look up Where in the Hell is Matt, you can find me dancing in various places all over the world.
Yeah, I say just embrace it. Much like I've embraced, if someone wants to believe that I'm colorist Matt Wilson, they can.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
That's right, you're an arch nemesis.
Yeah. When my book comes out later this year, I'm just going to be like, hey, if you think the colorist wrote this, great. Just buy it.
Exactly.
He is one hell of a colorist, though, just saying.
Yeah, yeah, that doesn't do me any favors. He's too good.
I do consider him to be the Matt Wilson of coloring comic books.
That's funny. I think of Matt Wilson as the writer of superhero handbooks.
Yeah, you could take it either way, I guess. Matt and A&R, it has been great having you on. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks once again to A&R and Matt for joining us, and you should absolutely check out the Not Forgotten Anthology up on Kickstarter, because, hey, Matt's in it.
Yeah.
Now is the time of the show where Matt and I answer some questions, but Matt, before we do this, can I tell you a quick story?
Please do.
While you were doing the Loot Crate ad before the interview, I was taking a drink of some Gatorade, because I got to replenish my electrolytes, help my body repair itself.
Yeah, I heard.
It's funny that you heard, because I turned away from the microphone specifically so that you wouldn't. And instead, I my eyes fell on the Akewood strip that you got me for my birthday. And I just, like, it's the one where Ray calls Dilbert.
Uh-huh.
And I was just, like, I almost, like, I read that last panel again, and I almost started laughing while I was drinking Gatorade on mic.
Fantastic.
Oh, it's so good.
It's time to answer some listener questions. I'm going to ask a couple of recent ones from some anonymous questioners. And they are relevant to at least the last panel president special. The first one is, anyway.
Okay.
The first one is, do you have a favorite Garfield cartoon special?
The Halloween one, right? Like, yeah. I think we've talked about it before.
Garfield's Halloween Adventure.
Yeah, because it's weird. It's weird as hell.
Yeah, it's like strangely, surprisingly scary.
Yeah.
For this Garfield TV special for babies.
with the mellifluous voice of Lorenzo Music.
That's right. It's got like, doesn't it have like a ghost kid in it?
It's got legit ghosts in it. The world of the Garfield Halloween special is a world in which the spirits of the dead do not rest quietly.
There are pirate ghosts. I definitely remember the pirate ghosts.
I remember there being some pirates. And there's, like, that creepy old man who, like, tells the story. He's, like, really... Like, Matt, I feel like we're going to have to watch it and do a commentary track for Ajax or Movie Fighters or something when we get close to October.
We may end up doing it. It's only a half-hour special, so I don't know if it qualifies for a Movie Fighters, but... maybe for some bonus content, we could do a commentary track for Garfield's Halloween Adventure. Also, I think we have to mention Garfield His Nine Lives, the TV special. I don't remember necessarily the one from the comic, because that has like a hard-boiled noir thing in it that I don't super remember. But the TV special, I definitely remember, because I remember the like caveman part of it. Well, first there's like a creation part, then there's a caveman part. It's like Garfield throughout history, which is very strange. Also, they die at Garfield and Odie die at the end.
Yeah, this one, like the deeper we get into Garfield, the more fucked up Garfield becomes.
They go to heaven and meet God.
I cannot wait to go to GarfieldCon with you.
It's going to be amazing. And Daniel Kibblesmith is hopefully maybe coming as well. It's going to be wonderful. The other question I wanted to ask, and we can answer this one quickly, I think, even though the more I think about it, the harder it is to answer. The question is, which TGIF show was the best?
I mean, it's got to be Family Matters, right?
I mean, by attrition, it's got to be Family Matters.
I mean, what even comes close? It's Step by Step, because like Step by Step was not
Step by Step was bad. Like
Step by Step was not as good. Here, I'm gonna go through them. We're gonna go
now. I think Sabrina the Teenage Witch was considered a TGIF show. Near the end of TGIF.
Holy shit! Did you know that TGIF started in 1985?
I did. I was aware of that. Yes.
Oh my god!
Perfect Strangers was part of it.
Yeah, like Webster was. Oh shit! Do you remember the Charmings?
I don't remember the Charmings.
Okay, the Charmings was a show that I thought I had dreamed for years. It was a sitcom that was like a sequel to Snow White, right? Like Snow White and Prince Charming and the Wicked Stepmother put the Charmings to sleep for 1,000 years and accidentally cursed herself, and so they wake up like 1,000 years later and they move to fucking Burbank. It was bananas.
I don't remember that at all. I'll read off some other TGIF shows, though, and we'll decide if these can top Family Matters.
Okay.
Webster. No.
Not a fan.
Mr. Belvedere.
you know, he sat on his balls one time.
They had to stop shooting the show.
They had to stop shooting the show.
Different Strokes. That one doesn't qualify, I don't think.
Yeah, I feel like that's not, like, prime TGIF.
A show called I Married Dora, which I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, I don't know about that either.
Oh, Sledgehammer was actually considered part of TGIF for a while. That wins. Sledgehammer was the fucking best.
No, I've actually never watched Sledgehammer.
It's great.
Okay.
Dig it up and watch it, if it's on fucking YouTube. Well,
I think it's on Netflix, or was at one time.
Sledgehammer is the best. Sledgehammer is my answer for the best TGIF show.
Yeah, you are very committed to this.
Because it ain't Hanging with Mr. Cooper, it ain't Sister Sister, it ain't Boy Meets World, it ain't Muppets Tonight. I love the Muppets, but Muppets Tonight was not good.
Now, what do you think of Just the Ten of Us,
Matt? Not good. Not a good show.
I would love to revisit Just the Ten of Us, because that show has a completely bonkers premise. The premise is that Catholics like to fuck.
Yeah, I mean, it's 8 is enough, but with just 2 more people.
Yeah, that's what that show is. It's not like a Brady Bunch situation, like, where there's 2 families. It's like they just, like, kept popping out kids.
Do you know what by the end of TGIF, what the lineup was?
Okay, hit me.
It was weird. Okay, Boy Meets World was still on.
Okay.
The Hughleys.
Okay, starring D.L. Hughley.
Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Sabrina the Teenage Witch, which I don't think people remember that Sabrina ran for, like, so long.
Like,
there's, like 400 episodes of Sabrina.
There's, like, 10 seasons of Sabrina.
It's so long.
And then Making the Band was a TGIF show.
Like with P. Diddy?
I think so. I don't know if P. Diddy was still on it, but it was Making the Band. One other show that I should mention that was a TGIF show that I did watch when it came on was Dinosaurs.
Oof. Yikes.
I'm the baby, not the mama.
Ugh.
It's definitely Sledgehammer with Family Matters a close second. And it's not like Family Matters was good. but compared to its competition, I mean, I watched Boy Meets World. I watched the hell out of some Boy Meets World, but it would not hold up on a rewatch.
Matt,
I guarantee.
I'm going to ask you a question without looking. Can you guess how many episodes of Sabrina the Teenage Witch there were?
Well, I know it made it to syndication.
Right, so there's at least 100.
There's at least 100. I'll say 240 episodes.
You're wrong. You significantly overestimated, which is shocking.
Okay.
There are 163, but there are also 3 movies.
Okay. Okay. So less than I thought.
Less than I thought, too, but still, like, pretty intense. That's all, like...
The Simpsons has so totally thrown me off on the number of episodes a TV show can have, because there are, like, 500 episodes of The Simpsons.
Well, there's, like, 1,500 episodes of Monday Night Raw, dog.
I mean, fair. All right, that is going to do it for our listener question segment. If you would like to send us a question, you can go to our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast@tumblr.com. .tumblr.com, I should say. You can also send us listener questions by email. You can do that by sending an email to warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send every story ever list, panel president lists, comments if you have them, or if you want to, you could let us know if you want to sponsor the show by emailing us. Also, check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com, which is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. You can also find the Every Story Ever and Panel President lists there. I'm hoping to update them as soon as I can, even though I'm going to be a travel boy this weekend. Now we've reached a part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net, and you can find links to all my stuff. Chris, where can people find you?
Everybody can find links to my stuff at the-isb.com. That'll give you links to the comics that I write, the columns that I write, the other podcasts that I do, including Sailor Business and Xena Warrior Business. So check those out. I also just started, I guess 2 episodes ago, Emma Lawson and I are doing Comics Alliance's recaps of Riverdale. The column is called Pals and Gals. That show is buck wild. So go check out those and watch Riverdale if you're not already, because I want that show to last for 8 seasons, because they absolutely will go to space at one point if it does. That brings us to the end of the show, but before we go, we always like to highlight a charity or an organization that could use your donations and your help, and I think we've got a good one this week. I was thinking about talking about the ACLU, and that is an organization that is worth donating to, and I did set up a recurring monthly organization for that this week, and you probably should too, but they are now the strongest they have been in their entire history in terms of monetary donations, so we were hoping we could spread that around a little bit to someone else that might have been overlooked over the past few weeks. Matt?
I was thinking that we could send people to go help out at the National Immigration Law Center, an organization that does some of the same work as the ACLU has been cited with doing over the past few weeks, but it is strictly focused on immigration and helping secure the rights of immigrants and make sure that immigrants are given all the legal rights that they are afforded under our Constitution and our laws. It helps them get economic support. It helps them get work rights. It helps them, you know, obtain identification and other stuff that people need when they're going to be, you know, changing jobs. Or changing lives, really, is what they're doing. So if you're looking for a group to help out, you've already maybe sent a donation to the ACLU, because I know a lot of people have done so. The NILC is a good place to go.
That's right, and you can find them at nilc.org. So check them out, and if you can, throw them a little bit of a donation. So that does it for War Rocket Ajax number 339. Matt, how do we do?
S rank.
Oh, always with the S ranks. We're so good. Everybody,
what are we going to do with all these S's?
What do you do with 339 S's? I don't know. There's probably a couple B's in there somewhere. Probably a couple D's, to be honest. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week. Keep your heart 3 stacks.
We love you.
Yeah!
Zion.
We're gonna take another sip right now. Fuck you, buddy.
And every listener.
No, here's.